You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Another slow news day in Newsweek, of course, but I am so very fortunate to be joined by my friend and colleague, the political editor and creator of the Recombobulation, right at the top of the show, Dan Schaefer. Thanks so much, Dan, for making time. We got a bit of pretty important political news that just broke not too long ago here in Wisconsin. Tell us more, Dan.
Yeah, some big news breaking this afternoon as it pertains to the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. Ben Wickler, the chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, has announced that he does not plan to run for another term as the chair of the party. He originally took over as the chair in June of 2019, has served a number of terms since then, but will not be seeking another one when the state party has its convention in June. So huge, huge news. Ben Wickler obviously has been on quite a winning streak overall as the state party chair in Wisconsin. And this is going to be a big change for the state party going forward.
In his announcement, Dan, which I read as extremely heartfelt, right? I can imagine that Mr. Wickler is a bit tired. It's been quite a number of years for him. Wisconsin never anywhere but the crosshairs of national politics, so much at stake within the state as well. And he pointed out in his letter many of the successes that we Wisconsinites or that the party has had within the state of Wisconsin. This wasn't entirely unexpected, though, was it, Dan?
No, I think, you know, when we saw after the election last year, there was the expectation that Wickler probably would not be running for another term as WISDEM's chair. Now, of course, at the time, that resulted in a turn where he was running for the national chair of the Democratic Party, the DNC chair. He did come up short in that effort. Ken Martin from Minnesota was elected to that position. So I think there was some rumblings of, you know, would Wickler consider staying on for another term? Now he makes the announcement official that he will not be running for another term as state chair of the party. His time as WISDEM's chair will end in mid-June, when the state party has its convention in Wisconsin Dells.
Is surely to be a convention to watch, not just for what it means for state politics, Democratic state politics here in Wisconsin, but potentially what sort of leader will the Democratic Party in the state of Wisconsin choose? Currently, the first vice chair of the party is Felicia Martin. She's a county board supervisor, has never run for anything other than party leadership and county supervisory seats. We also have second chair, she's running for that as a candidate, and second chair candidate Lee Snodgrass. Are these people that may consider running for the chairpersonship of the entire state party? What are prognosticators saying? Who do you think might be throwing their hat in the ring to run Wisconsin's Democratic Party?
Well, there is already one candidate who has announced a campaign for the chair of the Democratic Party. That is the former WISDEM's executive director, Devin Remiker. Remiker was part of the Harris campaign last year. He has been a longtime you know, part of the WIS Dems party there. So I would expect that that launch coming minutes after Wickler announced his news, I would expect that launch to gain some traction. You know, he's been a part of the party for quite some time. We'll see if he gets, you know, backing from Wickler, which would seem to be significant as well. There have been a number of other names in the mix. I imagine there will be some surprise candidates along the way between now and June. But I think Remeker's announcement coming right after Wickler's announcement does seem especially significant.
Yes. And, you know, who knows if they spoke to each other about the coinkydinky timing there. I won't make that conclusion. But certainly if Remeker was planning on running this, you know, you wait, you got your presser ready to go as Mr. Wickler made his announcement. Here's the thing that's on my mind, Dan, and I wonder your thoughts about this. And it's two different, somewhat competing thoughts. And that is, because the state of Wisconsin is such a critical battleground, a canary in the coal mine, a harbinger, if you will, of sometimes which direction the national politics may be moving. It has long been considered a purple state. So here are the two competing thoughts. One, when I look back at, for example, the Scott Walker recall, Tom Barrett's runs for governor, one of the after-action thoughts about those was that you can't take people, or it's not a really great fit to take people that are more familiar with what I'm going to call Washington, D.C., Beltway political campaigns, national consultants, and drop them into Wisconsin, that we're a bit of a unique snowflake. People here are motivated by real genuine authenticity. There is a suspicion of folks that aren't of and from here and by here. So we've got those two things kind of at odds, which is Wisconsin so important to the national political dialogue, often seen as sort of the tip of the spear for much of what's going on, especially in swing states. And yet we need someone, and generally speaking, people that have been more successful in rallying votes to their preferred candidates are folks from here. What does this mean for the choice that's facing the state party when it comes to a leader? Does a leader, their next chair, really have to be able to articulate not only, you know, how they're going to execute within the state, but how they help bridge Wisconsin politics into the national discourse?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right to characterize it like that. Wisconsin is so often the canary in the coal mine when it comes to national political dialogue and all of that. And, you know, so many things start here. I think you can make an argument that, you know, the real resistance to the Trump-Musk administration really started here last week with the results of the spring election. And I think it is going to be, you know, whoever takes on to this role is not just a state party chair. It is a role that has national prominence because of Wisconsin's place, you know, at the center of the electoral map as the canary in the coal mine, you know, pick a metaphor, for where we are. You know, for what it's worth, Remeker notes in his press release announcing his campaign for this is that he is a lifelong Wisconsinite, born and raised in Two Rivers, Wisconsin, went to UW La Crosse. And, you know, so I think that is going to be an important part of that as well. You know, we don't always, as evidenced by a couple losses from Republican candidates, we don't always like people to parachute in to the state to run in a statewide race.
So billionaires like that, from out of state handpicking candidates and handing out $1 million like lottery checks to people. Yeah, maybe not the best look for candidates or politics here in the state of Wisconsin. Let's flip the script a little bit, Dan. I want to ask you, what do you think is next for Mr. Wickler? A well-earned break by all accounts. Is he going to run for an office? Kirk from Madison, one of our longtime listeners on the text line, musing that he may hope that Mr. Wickler runs for governor. Now, Ben's never held an elected public office. So what's the crystal ball that Mr. Schaefer has saying about what's going to come next for Ben Wickler?
Well, I do think he'll probably take some time to recombobulate here over the next few weeks. But after that, He will, you know, when I was reporting the story about his interest in running for DNC chair a couple of months ago, when I was talking to Democratic sources around the state, people said that he does have some interest in running a statewide race at some point. Now, whether that would be governor for 2026, you know, might depend on what Tony Evers does there.
Right.
You know, whether that's a run for Senate in 2028. That's when Ron Johnson's term will be up. That remains to be seen. But I do think that he will probably look to run for statewide office at some point. Just a matter of when.
Folks, if you're just joining us, we've got political editor Dan Shaver, creator of the Recombobulation, with me, Maggie Dawn, this afternoon to kick us off with a bit of breaking news. Ben Wickler announcing he will no longer be seeking to run and win and be the chair of the Wisconsin State Democratic Party. Dan and I engaging in a little crystal ball gazing this afternoon about what may be next, both for the Wisconsin Democratic Party as well as Ben Wickler. Here's my thought, Dan, and I'd love to get your response. Having been someone who actually had to run some things in government, and having watched countless, literally more than I can count, elected officials move from the legislative side into the executive branch, watching folks that had never run anything in government come into government, my across the board, I don't care what your party is, thought has always and will remain until somebody proves me wrong, this. I think experience actually running things within government, or at least having some basic governmental expertise, even if it is just in an elected office, is incredibly valuable, especially as you're trying to ascend to statewide elected offices, be those governorships or on the legislative side in a state senator seat. What's your thought about that? Do you think that might be an avenue by which Ben goes about maybe burnishing up his resume a bit before a potential run?
You know, he's really got his name out there now, you know?
Yes.
And I do think, you know, if you were following the campaign last year and all the different events that were happening around the state, Wickler, you know, I don't know how many states have their party chair go up on stage and speak before the candidates and all of that
right.
come out. Wickler was there speaking before everybody. So not only does he have a record of success winning races in Wisconsin, he's getting himself out there speaking in front of audiences at campaign events too. So would not surprise me at all to see him run for something someday.
Yeah, you get the bug. You get enough Viva Papa cheers from the people, and maybe you want to do a little bit more than that. Listen, Dan, thanks so much. I appreciate you joining us for this breaking news. His name's Dan Shaver, our political editor. You can subscribe to his Substack, The Recombobulation Area, and find his work at civicmedia.us. I'm Maggie Dawn. We'll be back. What the heck was Gretchen Whitmer doing in the Oval Office yesterday? We discuss next right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Hey, I'ma keep running because the winner don't quit on
themselves. You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome back if you're rejoining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Big thanks to Dan Shaver, our political editor here at Civic Media, hopping on last minute to talk about a bit of breaking news. Ben Wickler announcing that he will not seek re-election as the Wisconsin State Democratic Party chair, opening up an avenue for some other leaders to emerge. Of course, the prognostication becoming what is Ben going to do next? Who's going to lead the party? How are they going to lead it? How do they help galvanize Wisconsin Dems and independent voters and swing voters? Quite a moment for Democrats, liberals, and progressives. And that brings me to Governor of Michigan, Gretchen Whitmer. Gretchen Whitmer yesterday, in case you missed it, was in the Oval Office with Donald Trump. Now, in the last, I would say, about month or so, with additional focus in the last week, Gretchen Whitmer has been trying to thread quite a needle on tariffs. Now, let's just take a pause for a second. I'm going to address tariffs just in philosophical form for a moment, because I don't want anybody to be confused about my position on tariffs. Maggie's position, me personally, is that laser-focused tariffs are quite important in certain industries or sectors to ensure that U.S. businesses are competing on a fair basis with international competitors. Joe Biden has used them, Democrats have used them, Republicans have used them. Tariffs remain an important tool, a scalpel, if you will, a tool of precision in ensuring economic growth and, again, fair competition for U.S.-based companies. I do not believe that Donald Trump's completely blunderbuss, gosh knows what the hell he's doing approach is anything anybody can stand behind. But Gretchen Whitmer's essentially trying to make that similar point that I just made without directly criticizing Donald Trump. Now, you all may be thinking, Gretchen Whitmer, she's this great Democratic governor. Wasn't that the lady that they tried to kidnap? Yeah, that's her. Why on God's green earth would Gretchen Whitmer want to be in the Oval Office with Donald Trump? Well, the answer is fairly self-evident if you zoom back out again. Gretchen Whitmer has presidential aspirations. She is largely assumed by most folks that tend to watch this kind of thing that she is going to run for president in 2028. So what does that mean? She's going to have to court some of Donald Trump's voters, arguably, certainly going to have to court swing voters in her home state of Michigan, places like Wisconsin, Georgia, Arizona, Pennsylvania, etc. Well, when you look at especially Michigan, what is Michigan known for? The auto industry. And so Gretchen Whitmer's tiptoeing through the minefield of tariff policy and her reticence at criticizing Donald Trump directly is in part a reflection of the fact that she will need folks that work in auto manufacturing in her home state of Michigan if she wishes to make a even semi-salient run for president in 2028. Again, this to me is an interesting sort of bookend to our discussion about Ben Wickler, and that is watching how people who have held one role within the political arena, Ben as a state chair, helping to architect statewide wins to the tune of 12 out of 15 while Ben was chair of the Democratic Party of the state of Wisconsin. The question, of course, is how does someone that is doing that job then move to some other elected office successfully to run? Not help others run, not help fundraising for other people run. How does Ben do that? And likewise, there's always a question when someone who has been successful within their state wants to take that big, huge step up onto a national platform and potentially take a run at a presidency. You have to have a bigger tent. You have to have a message that appeals extremely broadly. And that can often be extraordinarily challenging. I'll just say this. Gretchen Whitmer looked like she wanted to teleport herself to anywhere else in the entire Milky Way universe than to be standing there in Donald Trump's office as he lavished all kinds of praise on her. Like, one fast way to alienate your progressive base is to get Donald Trump to lavish praise upon you as he's standing right next to you. The other thing that Donald Trump did while she was there was sign a number of what I'm going to call more Donald Trump draconian crud executive orders. And I'm just going to say this. If you want to be on the national political stage, Governor Whitmer, you've got to be able to anticipate what someone like Donald Trump might do. And that is exploit the fact that you're in the Oval Office with him to put you in a really uncomfortable place, which he did by signing those executive orders with her in the room. It wasn't a good look. I thought it was kind of a disaster. Seems very ham-handed. I don't know how this is going to play out long-term. And I don't know why she said anything in the first place. She could have issued a lot of sort of very generic statements about tariffs, again, being used as a scalpel to help support fair competition for American businesses and industry, but that this wholesale, you know, sort of blunderbuss across the board approach is concerning, and it's concerning for middle class working people in the state of Michigan. She didn't do that. She's gone out more vocally and talked about that. So I wonder if that's a misstep. All of this brings me back to Mr. Wickler. If he's listening out there, one, Ben, congratulations on what I can call one of the most successful terms as Democratic Party chair. The second thing I want to say to Mr. Wickler is this. I beg of you, friend, if you want to run for statewide office, please spend some time actually trying to run a government department. In some government, maybe the governor's got a spot for you as a cabinet secretary for Governor Evers, or in a local government. But the real experience of making government work for constituents, for residents, with smaller and smaller budgets, a phenomena in nearly every jurisdiction, is something that is invaluable, in this person's opinion, for any elected official. We're going to come back. I got a great special guest coming up next. His name is Dan Cotter. He's a lawyer. We're going to talk about some of the Supreme Court rulings, Donald Trump's attack on the rule of law. This guy even wrote a book about the Supreme Court. You're not going to want to miss it. Coming up next, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. Welcome, everybody. Welcome back. If you're rejoining us, my name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. You can join what I hope is going to be a very enlightening conversation this afternoon with fellow lawyer, author, and student, observer of the Supreme Court, Dan Cotter. You can join Dan and I as we dive in on a number of topics involving the legal system, the courts, and especially the Supreme Court at 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Dan wrote a book in 2019 called The Chief Justices. You're going to want to check that out. He's been president of the Chicago Bar Association. He's current president of the National Conference of Bar Presidents. He's joining us from an airport in Washington, D.C. Thank you so much for making time, Dan. Let's start right there. What you doing in Washington, D.C.? And is, like, what's the vibe check in D.C. these days?
Thanks, Maggie, first of all, for having me on the show. I'm here. The last 2 days were ABA, a day on the Capitol Hill. It's an opportunity for the American Bar Association and the state and local bars to come and meet with their congressional representatives and talk about the issues that are not nonpartisan but of importance to lawyers. And in some years, it may be a different conversation. But this year, the main two things really talked about, or three things. One is security for judges and making sure that judges are independent and secure. The second was the Legal Services Corporation, LSC, gets about $500 million a year that it then disperses and gives best practices across the country for legal aid to make sure that funding's secure. And then there was a bill last year that I think President Biden vetoed that had to do with expansion of the courts, and there's been a real need for additional judges. There were some politics that took place last year, but that's the other item. The tone here, it's kind of a surreal kind of a – I'll tell you what Senator Hirono spoke after Senator Chuck Grassley spoke at breakfast this morning, and he got up and said, you know, it's obvious we're living in two different worlds right now. And she went on the attack and was a very forceful and effective speech. Chuck Grassley, you know, at the end kind of warned the ABA that they should stay out of political issues and didn't seem to offer any solace or anything from what's taking place with the administration and with respect to judges and law firms.
An opportunity certainly lost for Senator Grassley to get up in front of a bunch of leaders like yourself, Dan, of the legal profession and say, stay in your lane. As a president, as more and more Republicans openly thwart the rule of law and threaten sitting Article III judges, let's talk a bit about that. One judge in particular has been in the crosshairs of Donald Trump and MAGA. That is Judge James Boasberg. He is the judge, folks, if you haven't heard his name before, that has been presiding and is deciding on potential sanctions related to the invocation of the Alien Enemies Act to deport alleged gang members without due process on airplanes out of Texas. This was the whole hubbub that we had about what time was the order issued? Was it actually entered on the docket? When did the planes leave? When did the administration know? That's Judge Boasberg. Really fascinating piece in the New York Times about Judge Boasberg, who is a conservative. He was appointed by George W. Bush. He was buddies with Justice Kavanaugh at law school. They live together in the same townhouse. They're sort of cut from the same cloth. He is a largely revered and deeply respected jurist who is considered to be thoughtful, very intentional, very deliberate, and that his decisions are incredibly well-reasoned. He's not overruled with a great degree of frequency. I bring up Judge Boasberg because of the fact, again, Republican appointee, and yet Donald Trump has called him a radical left-wing lunatic, demanded his impeachment, to which Chief Justice Roberts then had to issue effectively a reprimand directed at unnamed persons in effect, but of course it was about Donald Trump. I mention him because there are these very direct attacks. So to have Senator Grassley addressing the leaders of the American Bar Association this morning and saying, you guys should stay out of politics, when politicians are directly targeting federal judges, seems to be at best ironic and at worst totally ridiculous. This also happening at the same time that the House of Representatives just yesterday, Dan, passed legislation that would bar federal district court judges from issuing nationwide injunctions. So, yeah, the rule of law and lawyering and judging has gotten quite political. Wanted to ask you this, Dan. With all of that in mind, when you talk to other leaders within the legal profession, you're of course a partner, a member at Dickinson Wright PLLC in Chicago. You're a leader within the American Bar Association. When you are having private conversations with other lawyers of national reputation, other leaders of the practice of law, how concerned are people that the rhetoric surrounding our legal system, the direct targeting of judges, this bill being introduced by the House, has gotten so extreme in what seems like a fairly condensed period of time?
It's unprecedented. And, you know, I'll give you an example. While we were out here yesterday, as we finished with meetings and we're getting ready to go to the reception, I don't know if you saw it, Maggie, but the Department of Justice prohibited attorneys from participating in events organized by the ABA, and they talked about, the Deputy Attorney General talked about activist causes that conflict with the DOJ's mission, including litigation that challenges President Trump's policies. And so we're very concerned. Another executive order went out against another law firm yesterday. That's a firm that won the case for the data company against Fox, which is not even directly related to President Trump. It's very concerning that this is really an attack on the ability of lawyers to be independent. And it's a playbook out of autocracy. It's you shut off the media, you shut off lawyers. And so I think people are very concerned, but at the same time, you just talked about the judge. First of all, three words about him, about her emails. It was Boasberg, in fact, in 2016, right before the election, that ordered her to disclose 16,000 emails that allegedly were on bad servers. Let's not talk about SignalGate or anything else, but that's...
You're talking about Hillary Clinton's emails.
Yes, yes. That was Judge Boasberg.
This was the same judge. Boasberg,
the same judge.
Thank you for correcting my pronunciation, Dan.
Yeah, and so it's intended to chill, and for a lot of reasons, you know, law firms and lawyers and judges and professors are not necessarily speaking out about it. But I think, you know, my conversations with other leaders, with friends that are lawyers, even with family and people that aren't lawyers, is that this is an unprecedented attack. And it's the goal here is to stifle, right, and to put that chilling, you know, I saw a take on Shakespeare's first thing, we kill all the lawyers. It says first thing, we chill all the lawyers. And that's what's taken place here. It's not something that I think long-term, if there's not a fight against it and some relief, I think we can be in serious trouble. And unfortunately, the judge who issued the ruling about the return of the person who's been gone since March 15th, by the way, that he canceled the hearing because the Supreme Court said the only place to bring the actions was in Texas, and really didn't talk about these people that are actually overseas, you know, that are already in El Salvador. There's concerns about, again, I saw that one of the leaders or alleged leaders of MS-13 is not going to get a trial, but he's going to be deported. Like, again, where are our due process rights? There's the lawyer in Michigan that you probably seen, Maggie, that had his phone confiscated when he returned to the U.S. From the Dominican Republic on vacation. These are things of major concern.
Dan, if I can hop in here, my desire to travel internationally is very low right now. As an attorney and as someone who speaks out, folks, if you're just joining us, we got Dan Cotter. He's a lawyer out of Chicago, a leader in the American Bar Association. He is a corporate law and litigation practitioner. He's looked at corporate governance, cybersecurity, employment law, privacy law. He was president of the Chicago Bar Association. And wrote a book on the Chief Justices of the Supreme Court called The Chief Justices, not literally, or quite literally, I should say. Here's the pattern that I'm seeing, Dan, and tell me if I'm wrong. One, it was Donald Trump coming out with the short list of firms, starting with Perkins Coie, that had in the past litigated against what he perceived to be his interests, either directly or in election lawsuits. There was that list. Now it appears to me, with the executive order he signed yesterday, that it is literally quid pro quo in the negative sense. If you are a large corporate law firm, and you, through your largely a lot of this is through pro bono practice, although some firms step up and do this not on a pro bono basis, but largely for corporate firms on a pro bono basis, you represent one of these people who has disappeared in the middle of the night without due process. You bring any lawsuit challenging any Trump administration directive, executive order, regardless of the illegality, the facial illegality of it, Donald Trump is going to slap your law firm with an executive order that's going to make it very hard to serve corporate clients if you cannot enter into a federal building. You can't negotiate with federal agencies who might be investigating corporate clients. You can't even appear in a gosh darn federal courtroom if you read the EOs literally. Is that the pattern now? You challenge anything I do, and you're from a large law firm that has to interact with the federal government, we're going to slap you with an EO the next day.
That does seem to be the pattern. And he also issued a memo to Attorney General Pam Bondi to go after those that brought causes against the government that he deemed to be frivolous. And it's just shocking. And it's not just law firms. It's also the poor guy who appeared in court on this deportation case. He honestly, he's required by the rules of professional conduct to have candor with the court and be an officer of the court. And he told them that he had no good basis for or answers. And then the next day on Saturday morning, he was he's been put on unpaid leave indefinitely for who knows how long.
Yeah, if people don't know what you're talking about specifically, Dan, and I never got down into this granularity of detail, but Trump is the thinnest of skin, the most pettiest of human beings, because what he did was the Department of Justice lawyer, who you would have to think already had been vetted to a certain extent because they have sort of culled the ranks. He was a DOJ lawyer answering to Pam Bondi within the Trump administration, who is representing the Trump administration in the federal case brought about these deportations, the disappearing of people without due process. When he was asked by Judge Boasberg, am I saying this right, Boasberg? I want to get it right.
I've heard it both ways. Yeah, I don't actually fully know.
When he was asked by Judge Boasberg specifically about the man who had been disappeared from Maryland that a prior federal immigration judge had said should not be deported, hey, was that by accident? And he said, yes, and I'm not sure that there's any other basis for it. He answered honestly, which lawyers are legally compelled to do, lest they risk their licenses. Trump's answer to that via Pam Bondi was, you're going to be put on unpaid leave. In other words, getting fired for having attorney ethics. We're going to return with Dan Cotter, expert on the Supreme Court, talking about what the state of law is going to mean for you as Donald Trump continues his unrelenting attacks on lawyers, law firms, and your basic due process rights. Keep it locked. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm joined this half hour by my special guest, Dan Cotter. He's a member of Dickinson Wright PLLC in Chicago and author of The Chief Justices, an expert on the federal courts. Been a litigator for a number of years, president of the Chicago Bar Association for a year, current president of the National Conference of Bar President. He's taught the University of Illinois at Chicago College of Law, which some of us used to know as the John Marshall School of Law, knows a lot about what we're talking about this afternoon. Let's get into what I have been unable to articulate really clearly and well on a consistent basis, Dan. And I want to share this with our listeners. And that is this. Again, yesterday, the House of Representatives introduced a bill that has basically zero chance of making it through the Senate, I would like to think. But it seeks to bar federal court judges from issuing nationwide injunctions. They're doing this in response to a number of judges like George W. Bush appointed James Boasberg, who has heard cases challenging some of the Trump administration's actions, and some federal district courts have issued injunctions of nationwide applicability. That is occurring at the same time that the Supreme Court of the United States, through what is called its shadow docket, and I'm going to define that in a second so that everybody knows what we're talking about, through its shadow docket, seems to have a new decision rule. And that is through its shadow docket, where the Supreme Court will issue a temporary ruling, a ruling that is only going to apply until that case is fully litigated and fully argued before the Supreme Court sometime in the future, which could be months and months in the future, will step in and provide one or the other parties to a case some temporary relief. It's called the shadow docket again because the Supreme Court isn't required to issue a written opinion, though they sometimes do. And on the shadow docket, the court is not required, again, to author an opinion or say who voted which way, though they sometimes do. Through the shadow docket, the Supreme Court's decision rule seems to be, well, anytime there is any action by a lower court or appeals court that is contrary to Donald Trump's political aspirations and accumulation of power, well, then we'll step in and we'll provide relief to the Trump administration. At the same time that Republicans in the House and other Republicans are deriding federal court judges for actually exercising powers specifically contemplated in the Constitution to help parties seek redress as cases move forward. Dan, help me explain this better to people, because it's a little bit of wonk, right? I guess maybe the best way to summarize this is it seems to me that Republicans want one set of procedures and rules about what judges and justices can do when it's their team, and a completely different set of procedures, powers, and rules when it's the other team. Is that a fair assessment of what's going on to a certain degree?
Yeah, I've written extensively about that. I think when there's a D in the White House, the unitary powers and what they grant is often shrunk, right, in terms of the ability. In terms of the shadow docket, you explained it greatly, and it's called the shadow because, again, it's not a full brief. It's a lot of times these things aren't fully done at the appellate level. Justice Jackson, one of the dissents this week on a couple of emergency applications, called it a fly-by-night approach, and that it's dangerous because, again, there's not full briefing, there's no oral arguments, there's no real discussion amongst the justices. They mostly issue what's known as a per curiam opinion, which means nobody signs it. And these things are dangerous because, in terms of these things, they're playing with people's lives, right? This isn't, you know, the fund issue, whether that was an emergency or not, the return or issuing the funds under USAID, but we have lives at stake here, and they're in the worst prison in the world. And so it's called a shadow docket. It was named by a University of Chicago professor because it's not in the light of day. It doesn't have the same, just as you described it. And it does seem like there's a difference. In Trump's first term, I think he did 49 emergency applications, and 28 or 29 were granted, an astonishing number. And they're making substantive law now. They're talking about cases. They're talking about, they said that in this case that the person had a right to a hearing, all these people, but it has to be out of Texas and not the D.C.
Well, and they're in El Salvador. The court said nothing about how these individuals who have already been deported are going to have their rights vitiated. they said, yep, you have a due process right, but they're no longer here. It's sort of absurd. To put just and I'm going to get these exact numbers a wee bit wrong, but in Trump administration one, so 2017 to 2021, there were 49 applications for this kind of emergency relief on the, quote, shadow docket. I believe the total across George W. Bush and two terms and Obama two terms. So literally Donald Trump 4 years, we're talking about 16 years across those two presidents, that there was a total of about like 12 or 13. It was some shockingly low number. Those emergency requests by the Trump administration are exploding in his second term. Dan, we're going to have to leave it there for this afternoon. I thank you so much. Will you come back soon? We'll talk more about this, because this stuff is
endlessly interesting. I'll come back anytime you want.
I appreciate it, sir. Safe travels back from D.C. Folks, when we come back, let's talk about who's actually winning to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars as a result of all of this chaos Donald Trump is wreaking in the global economy. Here's a hint. It ain't you or me. Come right back on The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.